Welcome to Season 5 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are further expanding our knowledge by speaking to experts in the fields of physiology, psychology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, and mindset training. We'll be speaking to the coaches and practitioners who do this every day and to the researchers and academics who are at the forefront of the sciences. Today, our guest is Dr. Sinead Roberts. Dr. Roberts received her doctorate from University College London, where she studied the control of cell growth and fat metabolism. She is the founder of Feed, Fuel, Perform, a performance nutrition company that works with a myriad of different athletes, including many different weight category athletes. In this episode, we are going to discuss the differences between making weight in combat sports compared to other weight category sports, such as powerlifting and weightlifting. And we are also going to explore how Dr. Roberts successfully takes her athletes through the weight-making process entirely online. This is a great episode, so let's get to it. All right, that green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So joined by a very special guest all the way from London, England. We've got Dr. Sinead Roberts. Dr. Sinead, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Now, Dr. Sinead, you've been working with combat athletes for quite a while now, but you've been in the field of nutrition and everything else and science for quite a long time. You did your PhD over at UCL, and we'll just recommend that you worked for a little while. But as of late, quite a few combat athletes have been flocking to you and been taking care of them. How did that all happen? Can you tell us a little bit about your journey when you finished your PhD and kind of what you did after that? And then how did it come that you're kind of the go-to person for these combat athletes?
So a bit of a winding road. I finished my PhD, and then I loved the science, but I was working in quite a niche area, as most people are in their PhDs. And I was kind of just at a point where I thought, I kind of want to work on short projects with people for a while. So I actually completely ditched science and went into insurance audit, which was logical at the time, but obviously you sort of get into it and you're like, oh, maybe this isn't quite what I want. So I did that for sort of 5 years or so, and then kind of came back to started working, thinking about sports nutrition, and particularly I got back into training a bit, and that kind of made me more interested in the area again, because I saw, you know, you look at what other people are doing, you're like, why are you doing that? And eventually came back to science and sports science and started my nutrition coaching business, Feed, Fuel, Perform, about 2.5 years ago. Sort of started it about 3.5 years ago, but I was still working at the time. So it's been sort of the full thing for 2.5 years. Initially working mainly with kind of gen pop, so general population, people who are just interested in sports and in particular sort of CrossFit, functional fitness. And then just kind of as it goes, I think through word of mouth, started working with a couple of weightlifters and powerlifters. So in sports that are weight class based and helping people make weight. And from there and working with a couple of sort of friends who are in combat sports, kind of got a few more combat sport athletes. And it's just kind of one of those almost like snowball effects where it's a combination of word of mouth and kind of chatting to and being involved with a couple of sort of fight organizations. And yeah, just started working with more through that, which has been great for me because I love it.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes, though. Hey, it's like, it's not exactly like you can go to Google or, you know, Google Maps or whatever and just type in like combat sports nutritionist or combat sports dietitian, and then all these places will come up.
Okay, yeah.
Go see them. They're 10 minutes away. It is. A lot of it is word of mouth, and that's how a lot of people get into the field. It's like, you only need to work with or do a good job with one person, and then all of a sudden you're with that gym and another gym hears about it, and it's just a snowball effect. Something I did want to talk about, though, which is super interesting for me, is you were working with the powerlifters and then the weightlifters, and you got into combat sports. Now, obviously, powerlifters and weightlifters, they have to make weight before they go on. Now, with your experience with combat sport athletes and going through that process with them, what's the similarities? What's the similarities and what's the differences between the two sports or the three sports?
So I'd say the differences are probably easier. So the differences are, and obviously it varies across combat sports as well, but particularly if you're doing the final week, so weight cut to hit your weight, the weight regain period.
Right.
So, you know, how much can you cut that you can restore between the weigh-in and the competition time, and also how much you need to restore, because I think, from my perspective at least, for the weightlifting and powerlifting, assuming you haven't done a terrible cut, in terms of the actual energy output in the competition, it's a lot smaller than in a fight situation. So you need some immediate carbs, but you know your lifts are going to be powered by your creatine anyway. Yeah. Your immediate energy system. So there's almost, not that it's less risky, they still need to be well fueled, they still need to be well hydrated for that explosive initial movement. But I think there's probably, you've got to be even more careful on the combat sport side, both from the performance perspective, and obviously, you know, you don't want someone, from at least all the research that's been done, you know, you don't want someone really dehydrated, knocked out in the head, because they're going to be at much higher risk. So I think that's probably one of the main differences. And then also across the cut itself, typically I found that, at least at kind of the mid-level combat sport athletes, people still tend to train quite a lot in that last week. Yeah. Whereas in the lifting sports, the real strength-based sports, you're seriously tapering, because you're not going to go and try and bust out a one rep max the day before. You kind of want to do that on the platform. You're going to be seriously tapering the weights. So yeah, so kind of the amounts they'll be eating across that week differ, and also the amounts they'll need to eat to still A, perform across the week, but also I think the psychological aspect of being hungry and then feeling like a bit of a mess if you are getting into a gym and starting to try and do stuff can have a big impact on fight day as well.
Yeah, that's always interesting, hey, because I say to guys, combat sports are probably one of the only sports on earth where you're not loading up going into competition. Like even if you're in the weightlifting or powerlifting, like you said, if you're winding back on that output, you're matching that with your rest. Like you're obviously increasing. Where combat sports, it's all a bit backwards and it's not.
Yeah.
Hey, Dr. Sinead, if that's the case, then what type of numbers are they cutting then in the powerlifting and weightlifting? Is it comparative to combat sports? Is it more? Is it less? Or what did you find?
I actually find it varies more depending on the individuals. I've had more people in the powerlifting, weightlifting space who actually don't want to cut much in their final week. It makes me nervous because I think in combat sports, even from the start when you come in, it's just what's expected. And actually it's kind of reducing now, like, but you know, especially back in the day, it'd be like, oh yeah, we'll just cut X amount in the last week. It'll be fine. I just won't eat. I'll just wear a sweatsuit. It'll be great. Whereas I actually think this psychology in the powerlifting and weightlifting space, I think there's more of a focus on food in general, and people have more of an association with hunger means I won't perform as well, which obviously isn't necessarily the case either. But so I think people tend to cut, will only ever cut, at least who I've worked with, and because I go a lot with their preference as well, we typically would never cut more than sort of 3-5% in the last week. And that's probably at the more extreme end of what they want to do. They much prefer feeling confident in the weeks before. And as well, because I think there's much more the view that they're really a lot more focused on body composition. So that's obviously a long-term body thing anyway. So if you've been really focused on being as lean, but as big muscularly as possible in the period leading up, there's a slight difference in psychology, at least with the people I've worked with in general.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And that's a big problem within combat sports, is just the culture. And it's the weight cut culture where you're like expected. And I've heard stories of Louise Bloor. She said it to me. It's crazy. She was talking about the UK or British judo and saying that one of her athletes was saying, this problem started on my first day in the gym when I was like 6. And it said, okay, you weigh, what was it, 30, 35 kilos. They're like, you're going to compete at 29. That's just the expectation, is that everyone comes in and everyone cuts weight. And you see that across kids' jujitsu comps, and even now as we're getting into amateurs, it's getting a lot better and people are getting aware of it, but it is that weight cut culture. You said there, Dr. Sinead, that these guys are a lot more focused on body comp and not so much on, you know, the cutting the weight. Are these guys like having a period? Is it like we have fight camps in combat sports where it's like, okay, an arbitrary number, 8, 6, 12, whatever it is, weeks, where they're purposely dying. Do powerlifters and weightlifters do that? Is there like a period they're coming down, or is it like a year-round thing working on that body comp?
So it does vary depending on the individual, but it's very much tied in with their training cycles usually. With a lot of people anyway, particularly if that's their only sport, because some of them might be doing other sports like CrossFit or things in tandem. But you might have, you know, a real strength cycle where we'll do that in combination with sort of bulk or mass gain to support that. And then you might have, you might use periods of deload to, as just sort of a maintenance recovery sort of period where we're keeping weight about stable. And then if they've got sort of more of a sort of a power phase, maybe that's what we'll, the time we'll use to cut weight a little bit to get them down. So it's probably more periodized nutrition alongside their training. And, you know, if they're doing a phase where it's lighter weights, but actually they're working on their conditioning just to get their pure sort of work capacity up to support their training and performance, then again, that can be another good time where we're like, oh, brilliant. Well, you know, we'll use that to cut intelligent or reduced weight intelligently whilst trying to preserve muscle. So, yeah, I think it's more driven by their training cycles in that sport. Yeah. And when they're going on holiday. And all bets are off. Yeah.
That's it. That's a big one. Hey, Dr. Sinead, let's focus back on combat sports now. And I want to kind of understand and get to know your process of what you do with these athletes. And you can pick the discipline, you can pick the sport, whatever you feel most confident in or most comfortable with. Say an athlete is coming to you, I'm coming to you and I'm saying, hey, Dr. Sinead, I've got a comp in 6 to 8 weeks potentially. Massive and I want to be not massive, and I've got what's the process you're taking me through?
Most of my athletes I will work with remotely. You know, in an ideal world, one day I'll have them all at a facility and, you know, I'll go to all the gyms. But at the moment, it tends to be remote. So it's very much driven by conversations at the beginning. So trying to just speak to them as much as possible and understand the details of their training cycles, what their life outside of training is going to look like for the next 6 to 8 weeks as well, and what their day-to-day life looks like. Because I'm particularly for athletes who, you know, they're not pro, full-time pro in that the sport is their job and they get enough money from it. They've got other jobs as well. They often, you know, maybe they run their own gym, maybe they're coaches. And I think particularly for a weight loss phase, even more so than a weight cut sort of right at the end, how successful it can be is driven by whether it is practical for their lifestyle as well. And so it's very much around, you know, the practicalities of, you know, what does their day look like? So what can we actually realistically do? How much knowledge have they got of nutrition and all preconceptions from everything they've done over the last however many years, and where they've got their information from? How open they are to kind of just doing what you say versus how much that they want to take ownership. Because I think certainly with like general population and ideally with everyone, I see a big part of my job is trying to educate people so that they can manage it themselves. But obviously if someone comes to me 6 weeks out and they are like, I need to lose 15% of my body weight and my weigh-in is only 5 minutes before my fight, I'm going to kind of go, right, I'm going to be really prescriptive and you're having a meal plan because we don't have time for you to get it wrong kind of by learning the principles. So it's very much conversation driven. Then we will obviously get their specific metrics in terms of weight and, you know, what the competition looks like. Is it, you know, say BJJ, is it a tournament and you're going to have to weigh in 6 times and fight 6 times across a day? Or is it, you know, one set of 3 times 5 minutes in MMA or whatever? And then we just kind of start. So I will write an initial plan, and particularly on short time frames, it's a case of checking in every day, take body weight every day. How are you sleeping? What are your energy levels like? How much training did you do today? What else did you do today? Who did you fight with? Like outside, you know, like a verbal fight, you know, you argued with your family, or did you have a great day? Have you just got a promotion at work? Because all those things, I think, play into how you'll feel the next day, how you'll perform, how your weight will move as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All of that stuff, the sleep, the stress, they're massive. We have a rule where we have three, we call them the supporting pillars, sleep, stress, and hydration. And it's like, if you can't get your sleep, stress, and water right, the other big things we're trying to do in your meal plan aren't going to work, because it does. It affects, like, stressing out. How many people of your clients have you had where they should be losing the weight and they're doing all the training, they're eating everything, and they're not losing the weight, and you find out that, you know, they've got something going on at their work, or there's something going on. It's a real thing. Hey, Dr. Sinead, let's go through, like, the meal plan. What is that? What's the process when you're, like, writing that? What are you going through to actually, okay, these are the numbers and we're going to put it in the food? Can you talk us through that process?
Yeah, sure. So I will, so everything's ultimately based on numbers. So how many calories I think they should be having in a day, and how I think they should split that across the macronutrients, so your protein, fats, and carbs, and then how you should split that in the day in terms of meals and snacks, based on your training and life schedule. So in terms of getting the first sort of the totals for the day, I will take kind of two approaches. So I will use a kind of a standard calculation for estimated resting metabolic rate. So essentially how many calories I think they will be burning if they just laid in bed all day. And then I will, so it's sort of the very standard approach, and then add on their exercise activity on top of that. Mm-hmm. Their estimated exercise activity. And I'll do that in two ways. One, by just a general factor. Like, I'm like, are you really active? Okay, 1.7 or 1.8 times what your resting metabolic rate is. And I'll also simultaneously do, okay, well, based on what you've told me, how much do I think you're actively burning through the day? And I'll compare the two. So it's always, you know, it's a bit of an art and a science at the same time. So I'll get, and also just from, I think from experience, just from experience, I think over the years, you kind of get a feel for what will work versus what the numbers specifically say, which sounds so unscientific and probably something me 10 years ago would have been like, what are you doing? But I think that's a big part of it now. So that'll give me how much calories I think they're having. Then in terms of the protein, fats, and carbohydrates, I always describe it as a bit of a bank account, because you've got a certain number of calories to spend and you're never going to be able to optimize all three, but what's the most important at this point in time? So, you know, particularly for guys, actually even more so than girls, if they're going through quite a severe weight cut phase and it's more than about 4 weeks, I really think that protein needs to be jacked up to help protect their muscle mass. And then carbohydrates are their primary fuel for, you know, that's how they keep going in training. That's how they avoid hitting the wall and, I don't know, heading to the store for as much chocolate as possible, you know, like 8 p.m. at night. And then fats, whilst they're really important for long-term health, they're probably the thing I pare back the most, because short-term, it doesn't seem, at least from what we currently understand, it's not going to have as immediate effect on performance. So it's sort of doing the balancing the books there. And then, okay, well, great, how do we split that through the day? You know, you need protein regularly because it's not something your body can store. So we split that fairly evenly through the day. Carbs, we really center around training. So you feel good in the session, and you, particularly if you've got a long training week ahead, you're refueling afterwards. And then the rest of it is very much driven by, when do you like to eat? How long you will work for. So yeah, and then we will, I may give them numbers if they're someone who likes doing it all themselves, but usually in that short space, I'll be like, okay, well, that looks like at this meal, eat one of these things or one thing from each column, and I'll sort of give them a table of foods and we go from there.
That's brilliant. That's excellent. And then from there, you were saying that you're checking in with these guys pretty much day to day and you're checking weights and whatnot. How do you structure that check-in process, and do you have weekly goals that they're trying to hit, or how do you work that system?
Yeah, so I guess at the higher level, we do, we'll have a weekly, again, focusing on someone who's trying specifically to make weight, we would have a target weekly rate of weight loss. And that might not be linear across the however many weeks we've got, because it might be impacted by, okay, well, how's your training going to change over those weeks, or what have you got coming up? Or psychologically, if you're someone who really worries about making weight, you know, we'll actually try and accelerate it in the first few weeks because it will give you confidence. And actually, then we can give you a bit more food towards the end. So your energy levels go up a bit, that sort of thing. So we'll have target rates that we look at each week, and we formally check in once a week in terms of, okay, let's look, what have you found really hard this week? What's been really easy? What do we really know we need to focus on in the week ahead? Like, you know, have you forgotten to drink every single day until about 9 p.m. and then tried to down 2 liters or whatever and sort of been up all night because you need the toilet? How can we change that next week? And then we have the daily check-ins. So when we're really focused on making weight, like, send me your body weight, wake up, go to the toilet, take your body weight wearing no clothes and tell me what it is each morning, so we can keep a close eye on that. And then when they send me back that, I'll sort of reply with, okay, cool, how are you feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, have you noticed any trends? And again, I think out of every conversation you can have, which is probably more art than the science and you can crunch the numbers, it's the rate of weight loss. And this is something that I find, it's like, yes, you can get a predicted rate of weight loss, but what happens in reality is a whole nother thing. How do you manage that? Is it just with the frequent check-ins?
Yeah. And it's one of those where, you know, if it looks a bit odd for a few days, we don't change anything too fast because, you know, body weight is the most fickle thing you can imagine, isn't it? So it's kind of like, it might be static, and then suddenly drop off. So, you know, if it starts to look like it's not moving as we expect in either direction, either it's kind of going quite slowly, or it's like, why have you suddenly dropped 2 kilos overnight, kind of thing. We just start to ask those questions around, how are you sleeping? Yeah, are you drinking enough water? You know, if it has suddenly dropped rapidly in 2 days, it's okay, what have you been eating, in case they've suddenly dropped lots of fiber out of their diet? And so you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. All you've eaten is, I know, egg whites and honey for 2 days or something ridiculous. So, you know, and so that's why, okay, right, well, it's not real body fat that you've lost probably in that amount of time. So yeah, and then obviously if it's static, and also reassuring them, particularly if it's not going as fast, because the worst thing I think is that they can stress out, because that's definitely not going to help.
Hey guys, super quick interruption to the podcast to ask a super simple question. Are you sick of supplement companies selling you empty promises and products that are no better than fairy dust? I bet you are, and I'm sick of my clients forking out their hard-earned for it. That's why my colleagues and I created TrainAid, our very own line of a select number of lifestyle and performance supps that we know actually do something meaningful. We have used them with all of our clients, from the stay-at-home mum to our UFC world champions. No gimmicks, no elaborate marketing ploy, just science. To find out more, be sure to follow TrainAid on Instagram and TrainAid Performance on Facebook. All right, back to the podcast.
So this was going to be my next question to you, because this is something that's super common, super, super common. And there's probably a subgroup of athletes, both male and female, who are very, say, body conscious. And I'll even say it, like, maybe there's some background, you know, disordered eating or something like that that's going on in there. And they're very fixated on this number, and they'll check every day. And there's always, I'm sure you've had it as well, why is this number going up? What's happening? And how do you manage that? Is it exactly what you just said, where are you offering them education throughout to why this is?
Yeah. So I think it's a case of saying, okay, well, look, this is what body weight is. It's not just body fat. Let's look at the things that could be playing in. Don't worry, you know, we still have time usually, you know, like, we still have time. And even if we don't, you know, we still have time, it'll be fine. Yeah, and that piece around, okay, well, actually, what we'll also try and do is, body weight naturally has to be a focus, because it's what determines whether you can fight as you want to. But also in that period, and particularly if it's someone who, from the initial conversations, you can tell that it's something that's is a worry for them, it's about, okay, well, look, why don't we also take waist measurement? Why don't you also rate your energy levels every morning? Why don't we also focus on what you're eating? Because, you know, there are some really great foods that are going to make you help you smash training every day. So I think if you can try and broaden their focus, and also get them to see food as more than just impacting what it says on the scales in terms of their performance. You know, you're probably not going to be successful in achieving a complete change of mindset. Well, sometimes you are, actually. Some people, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe how quickly you've, like, just changed your whole outset. But, you know, some people, it's not something you can necessarily completely change in 6 weeks. But if you can start to change their psyche at least a little bit, it might make the next time they go through that process a little bit less stressful and a little bit easier for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you found that with athletes that you've gone through and done repeat camps with? Is that kind of in the back of your mind? It's like, yeah, we've got this fight camp and at this date we're going to make this weight, but in the back of your mind, okay, we've got some longer term goals. Does that happen with you with some of your clients?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think and I always actually like to talk about what's next, even whilst we're focused on making weight. And it's, again, just to broaden that horizon where it's like, cool, right, what we're going to do is we're working on this towards this date. You know, you're going to cut this. And then actually after that, you know, you've got probably a couple of months before your next fight. So let's really focus on performance nutrition here. Let's focus about on what you're going to be doing so we can really get you to where you want to be next time. And there's kind of I think there's three reasons for that. One is it gets them excited about something and not just, oh God, I'm going to be hungry for the next however many weeks, or, you know, this is hard. And then also it helps them not go off the rails afterwards, which can then help them not be at such a large weight to do their next weight cut. Because, you know, if they go off and have Pizza Hut, McDonald's and fried food for 4 weeks, the 4 weeks following their fight, you're like, oh, brilliant. you're probably going to feel a bit rubbish. You're probably not going to be performing as well in training. Can we sort of manage that a little bit? And then also it means that the next time they want to make weight, maybe we can incorporate a little bit of those foods whilst they're losing weight, because they haven't got as much to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree that, you know, post-fight rebound hyperphagia is a real issue in that sport. It's like exactly what you just said. It's like if you don't take it serious, you're going to start off in a worse spot than what we started last time. And, you know, but if you take it serious and we're going to do all of these things and we work on this long term, yeah, you can have a few more Snickers bars than you had last camp.
Yeah.
That's a real reality. That can happen. So everyone listening, listen to Dr. Sinead and the other practitioners when we tell you for 2 weeks after your fight, let's do a little bit more and then you get more Snickers bars. But let's talk about when you get into the fight week, because the fight week is notorious, right? That's when, and I'm not the biggest fan of this term, but this is when it starts, like your weight cutting. So when we're putting in our fight week strategies or your comp week strategy, your acute weight loss strategies, whatever you want to call them, this is when all of this, it's kind of like this is showtime, especially for us as nutritionists, dietitians, performance nutritionists. This is kind of really where it's our time to shine. What are you doing in there with your athletes? Talk us through the strategies that you're going through. Talk us through how long you're using them, what you've seen with them, what works, what doesn't work. Talk us through it.
Yeah. So actually, this is probably, this is an area that in the future I definitely like to change, because again, fight week, I tend to be, I'm remote. I've never actually been physically with an athlete the whole way through a fight week. So it's very, very conversation focused. So it's speaking sort of multiple times a day often, obviously depending how much weight they've had to cut. Interestingly, I've never done a massive, massive weight cut. I've only ever cut weight with people. I think the maximum I've done is probably, actually even with combat athletes, we've done probably about, you know, would have been about sort of 5% in the last week. So 3 to 5%. So not huge, huge numbers. So it's not been so stressful to sort of just be telling them what to eat rather than kind of making sure that's actually what they're eating. But tend to do, we'll definitely do low residue for, you know, the last 3 days. So that is basically removing fiber and other resistant starches from your diet because it sits in your gut. So it's almost removing weight for free, because, and you know, no likely performance impact long term. It's obviously, fiber is really important for health, but you can cope without it for a few days. And again, all of these strategies, it's going to be determined by what their diet was like before, because obviously if they weren't eating any fiber, they've got none to lose. But assuming they've been following sort of a meal plan from me, they will have had quite a bit of fiber in there. So we cut fiber out for the last 3 days. So that's probably the first thing that I would do. Starch reduced carbohydrates, again, because it's just reducing that weight of store of carbohydrates and water in the body. Exactly when I start that depends on what their training is going to look like that week, for two reasons. Two linked reasons. One is obviously if they're training quite intensely, for whatever reason, or doing quite a bit, then they're going to still need some carbohydrates, both to perform, but also probably psychologically, because if they feel like they're hitting the wall in each session, they're probably going to have reduced confidence going into the fight. But also because, you know, if they're doing activity, they will get rid of their carbohydrates quickly. Whereas if they're going to be sitting down for a week, then you need to cut the carbohydrates earlier because they're not going to be using them up anyway. So we need to cut them earlier to make sure they're reduced as far as possible. And then also from a water cutting perspective, so we'll do generally sort of a gentle water loading protocol. So, you know, give them high amounts of water for sort of 3 or 4 days and then take it right down the day before weigh-in. So they still keep peeing like they had a lot of water, but they don't. So you dehydrate them slightly. And attend to, because I'm not there in person, and obviously this is going to likely differ if I was in a situation where maybe they have more weight to lose, although hopefully, you know, I wouldn't be in that position. I've never actually done serious sweat protocols because I think particularly if I'm not there and depending who's with them, this could be so high risk that it would, you know, unless someone really knows what they're doing and is with someone who knows what they're doing, I think if you can possibly avoid it, it reduces the risk for the athlete in the moment. And then obviously from them rehydrating between weigh-in and fight, where you really don't want them to be dehydrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not agree with that statement more. And you saying that these athletes are only going in 3 to 5%, that's a real credit to you and the work that you're doing with them, right? Because like you just said, the most highest risk, we call them high risk to both health and performance, our red zoners, is that water cutting. Like, yeah, weight cutting is all of these fight week strategies combined, but that water cut right at the end on your scale of risk is smack bang right at the end in the reddest part of the red zone. And it is.
Yeah.
If there's going to be issues during that week, it's going to happen then. So, yeah, that's great to hear, because it is 3 to 5% is usually what guys are doing. And that's especially like us as a team, that's what our like safety standard is like 3 to 5%. So if you can just do that without having to do the bath, that should be the goal, right? That should be the goal for everyone. And the fact that you're doing it remotely, I think we're going to see a lot, especially nowadays and coming out of COVID, a lot of practice and a lot of practitioners are moving to the online space, right? So it is like, that's such a great point that you've brought up, is that is, it's a risky process. It's a risky practice. And if you're not there with them to monitor it, smack bang in the red zone. So just don't go there. Yeah. Don't go there. Let's talk about post-weigh-in. So you've done this, communicated with them, bang, they smashed their fiber, done their glycogen reduction, they've done their water load, they've woken up and they've gone, Dr. Sinead, you're the best, I'm on weight. And then they go, okay, how good? What are you doing post? They've stepped off the scale. Like, what's the protocol they've got? How many hours? What's the plan?
Yeah, so it will depend on, like, say, how many hours between weigh-in and fight. That will also have driven how much we'd have ideally been willing to cut, particularly from the water and carbohydrate perspective, because obviously the longer period you've got between weigh-in and fight, the more water and carbs you can get back in them for the fight. And obviously, you know, if it's a weigh-in 5 minutes before, have a sugary gummy bear, down a coconut water and go in. So I would say, you know, the shorter the weigh-in is going to be very much focused on, if you've got that sort of 5 to 10 minutes, A, really you're hopefully not going to have had them very dehydrated or carbohydrate depleted beforehand. But just to give them that boost, it would have them down something like coconut water or an electrolyte drink. So it's to get the water and salts and some carbohydrates back in, and then some gummy bears just for some, and get them to chew them for at least 5 to 10 seconds, because there is almost a bit like a carbohydrate mouth or a carbohydrate mouth rinse. So we know that carbohydrate mouth rinses, if you rinse for sort of about 10 seconds, whether it's because of a psychological stimulation, it does actually have to be sugar. It can't be just sort of an artificial sweetener, may have a performance benefit in that short-term period where really it's not digesting in that time. But we're at least getting some in, because particularly if they've got, you know, 3 5-minute bouts and it's sugar, then maybe they might have some more available by the time they get to kind of the end. Or if it's 5 5-minute bouts, then, you know, by the end of the 25 minutes, they're definitely going to have that, some of that in them. But obviously, yeah, the longer the weight regain period, the more opportunity you've got to get water and carbohydrates in. So I think with the water, it's try and drink 150% thereabouts of what you think you've lost in water weight, and do that by having it steady and regularly across the period, because we know that you're more likely to absorb more of it rather than if you just step off the scales and suddenly down 5 liters. Like, you're just going to be on the toilet for quite quickly and for quite regularly. So if you can have, yes, an initial big chunk, you're probably feeling thirsty, but then regularly between until when you fight. Typically we'll try and do that with electrolyte and carbohydrates in the water as well, because hydration is more than just water, it's water plus salts. So you kind of want to drink essentially the salt balance that's in your body. So you don't end up having too much water and not enough salts, which is dangerous for a start. And again, doesn't rehydrate you properly. And then the carbohydrates, we put some in the drink just so they don't end up feeling really full from having to have a lot of physical food. And then typically just get as many regular, small, high, fast digesting carbohydrates with some protein in between the weigh-in and the fight. And keeping fiber low, actually, like, you have cut fiber, but if you've cut fiber for 3 days, depending on the athlete, and again, it depends how many test runs you've done this, but if they suddenly eat a ton of sweet potato and broccoli, like, they're probably just going to have a really, really sore stomach and possibly be on the toilet. So it's not necessarily going to help them. Like, we'll leave reintroducing fiber until post-fight. And it's more likely for them to feel like they're weighed down, so they're heavier, but not in a functional way.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. There's the blueprint right through from start to finish. So, Dr. Sinead, last question I want to ask you, and this will probably take up a little bit of time, but I think it's super important, especially in, you know, when we're considering this for the volume of athletes that are going through this sport. It's a growing sport, and a lot more females are getting involved. And as you and I know, everywhere in sports science, females are always underrepresented. How are you changing this process, or are you changing this process, or where, if you are doing it, where do you change it to accommodate for the female athlete?
Yeah, so I think it depends. Well, it does depend. So there are certain things that we'll definitely make sure we focus on with a female athlete. If they're having if they're sort of a normal menstrual cycle, so they're not, you know, postmenopausal or anything like that, we are looking at hydration, particularly around the sort of the high hormone phase. So that's usually kind of the 3 to 5 days before the period where water retention and salt balance can kind of go a bit all over the place. So that's something that is mostly universal, although some athletes are more aware of it and sort of feel more of an impact of it than others. And then beyond that, it's quite individual specific in terms of how and whether we really make too many alterations, because I think different people have different experiences of it. Now, you know, I think a lot more research is needed to know whether that's kind of just because some people happen to notice it or not, but also because, yes, being a female has a big impact on life, I suppose, as much, you know, but it's just one variable from a training perspective. So, you know, if that's also coinciding with a change in training, sort of a specific, you know, a week in your cycle is coinciding with a change in training or a change in sleep or a change in stress, and they're sort of independent, any one of those factors can be having more or less of an impact. So again, it's one of those things we just kind of deal with on an individual basis based on how it's feeling with everything else. And for example, you know, if athletes are not sleeping well anyway or are more stressed, actually we probably put more focus on, okay, well, where are you in your hormone cycle as well? Because when you're stressed and tired, you're potentially more likely to feel the impact of changes in hormones as well, because your body is almost like another thing to deal with on top of everything else. Like, this is I'm hungry, I'm tired, I want sweets or anything like that. But so yeah, so the universal thing is hydration. And I mean, I really try and focus with all my athletes on refueling, unless we're doing a specific strategy where we don't want them to normally I will focus on them refueling with carbohydrates after a training session. But, you know, for females, particularly in the first week of their cycle, so when they're on their period, I think that's really, it's even more important to make sure they do that as well. So that's just something I'll probably ask, you know, did you have your post-workout? And just make a check.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. That's fantastic. So Dr. Sinead, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I said that one was going to be the last question, but this is the for real. People are listening to this and they go, Dr. Sinead, wow, like I need to work with her. I need to follow her work. I need to at least see what she's putting out there to the universe. What's the best way for people to follow you on socials? And if they want to work with you, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, sure. So I'm not on Twitter, but I'm on Instagram at Sinead.feedfuelperform. And people can contact me either by dropping me a message on there or by email, which is Sinead@feedfuelperform.com. So yeah, if you type and if you Google Feed Fuel Perform, I come up on there as well.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah, Twitter is a strange world. I only jumped on there this year. And I feel like Twitter is the epitome of everything that's bad with social media trolling.
Oh, really?
I just feel like it's just absolute social media troll central. I got told, because I don't know if you've noticed this, especially in the mixed martial arts world, everyone's on Twitter. So I kind of got really into going on it. And it's not a fun place to be. Everyone's a troll. So that you don't
I'll
have
use that
Twitter,
as my reason not
good.
To join.
Don't get on Twitter. And everyone that's on Twitter, stop being trolls because it's a terrible place. Anyway, Dr. Sinead, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate your time. I know you're super busy, but that was a great episode. I'm sure we got so much great learning out of that, and so many people will get a lot out of that. Again, guys, I highly encourage follow on socials and reach out. London is where you're based, hey, Dr. Sinead? And you work with everyone everywhere around the world, whoever can reach out?
Yeah, so I've got UK, US, Thailand, Australia at the moment. So, yeah, anywhere and everywhere.
Anywhere and everywhere, if you've got questions, if you need someone to look after everything we just spoke about, Dr. Sinead is the person to reach out. All right, I won't take up any more of your time. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thank you for having me.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. In an ever-changing landscape, it is people like Dr. Roberts who are leading the way in making sure that no matter the circumstance, athletes can have access to quality, scientific information when making weight. Be sure to follow her on socials to stay up to date. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.